Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Scale Riders Podcast. This is episode 77 with 65 Lokes, and I'm pretty excited for today's episode. This features my guest, Juan Guerrero. He is one of the founders of Central Coast Scale Classic. Let's go ahead and give him a call, and let's get into this convo about the upcoming show they got next week.
Hello.
Yo, Juan, what's up?
What's going on, nigga? How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Just trying to stay cool over here. How's the weather over there?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it's pretty hot today, man. It's last couple of days. I finally got warm, man. I've been struggling, man.
Out there as well. Right?
Yeah.
Dang, that's cool. Yeah, I got home early from work, and then I started kind of messing around with some pinstripe paint.
Yeah.
Just trying to practice, and every time I'm paletting the paint on the sheet, it keeps drying on me just because of the weather. Because
of the heat, huh?
Yep.
That's crazy. Yeah, and I've been waiting for this just to put something on my cars, too. I've been trying to do clear on these a couple of cars that I've been working on.
Uh-huh.
It's been so cold and, like, still raining over here, and it's just been kind of a pain to get things done over here. And then finally I get a couple of good days, and I can't work on them.
Yeah. Oh, man. The struggle, dude. Weather keeps switching up.
Yeah.
So are you getting these cars ready for the upcoming show?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I got three of them on the bench. I've been kind of struggling with all three of them. So, yeah, I'm trying to get them done. The issue is I'm kind of just, like, touching them, like, a few minutes at a time and then coming back on another day and then touching them here and there. It's not like I could sit down for a couple hours and work on them at a time.
Yeah. Right on. Wait, when'd you start on these?
Shoot, man, to be honest with you, I have a 67 that Pancho painted for me.
Oh, okay. I seen that
one. I got it. The 69.
Man, that's
dope. He did a killer job on that, man. I'm really, really happy about it. That one, I think I got about a week ago. I'm struggling with the interior on that one. I need to do the paint job justice on it. So, I've been struggling to make the interior look right for that one. So, but I've had these kits since, I want to say since the late 90s.
All right, on.
I got a son, the Monte Carlo, that it was probably about 80% done. And that one just needs a little finishing touches on it, probably another clear on it, another go through with the clear. And then I have a 63 that I'm actually redoing. That one was already completed. It's been done for 20 years, but I got to my kits and I kind of looked at it. I'm like, you know what? I want to redo it. I decided to, instead of starting on new kits, to go back to some of my old ones and either fix them, like redo them again, or finish some of the old ones that I've had just sitting there where they were just kind of like, oh man, this just needs a little bit for me to finish it.
Yeah.
So instead of retouching a new one, I'm kind of like, you know what? I'm getting some of these old ones that I've had sitting there for years. I'm talking about like 20 years, not just two or three years.
Yeah. They've been there for a while.
Yeah. Once they got put away in boxes, you know, it's kind of hard to get into them once they kind of get stashed away behind other junk, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Cause then, you know, you rebuild them. And it's like the second version of
pretty
it,
much, yeah. You know? Yeah, or like I had a vision for them originally, and then I'm kind of like, you know what? Maybe that's why I stopped, because I couldn't complete that vision, and now I'm bringing them out. I'm kind of like, oh, okay, now I want to go this route with it. So it might take me to the finishing point finally on some of these.
Yeah, yeah, I still have some, like back at my parents' house, I have this like plastic bin where I stored a lot of model kits that are opened.
Yeah.
And once in a while when I'm visiting them, I'll pop into the garage, I'll bust it out, and then I'll start pulling everything out and just kind of looking through each box, just seeing like where I left off and like at that time, like what level I kind of was at. And a lot of that stuff, most of it is rattle can stuff. And on some of them, I was barely learning, like at that time, like adding bare metal foil to them. And there's just different ones that I know I had a plan, like, oh, this is what I want to do to it, but I didn't know how to do it. So I had to kind of just put it at pause.
Put it away.
Yeah. And now that I look at them, I have a better idea. Like, oh, okay. Now I know a sense of like what direction to kind of go in order to get it completed. But I just haven't gotten around to it. I just, and then part of me too, it's like the energy or all the feeling I had for those cars right now, it's kind of gone away. Like my main focus is on these other cars that I'm doing body work on.
On the newer stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. The newer stuff. So I don't know, maybe later, you know, I can go back to those and, eventually complete them. So
yeah, well, like I said, if you can get to them, like I said, sometimes, like I said, I completely went through all my kits. I consolidated everything. Like there were some kits that were just kind of like, what the hell happened to the body? Like I got a box full of parts. I have no clue what happened to the body. You know, obviously they've gone through from a couple houses, moves.
Yeah.
Somehow I got lost, and I'm kind of like, oh crap! All right, well, I guess I got another body over here, so I have to mix and match now. So I consolidated. I threw away probably close to 10 or 15 boxes where it was just kind of, there was hardly anything in them. Like just a couple of things. I'm like, man, this is just taking up space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them I went through and like, I took out all the good parts. I'm like, oh man, this one still has all the chrome in it. Let's take it out. Put it. So I had like a whole box full of just like all the chrome pieces, a bunch of tires that I could still use. So I could really consolidate them. All right, cool. So now I got just kits that are ready to go pretty much.
Yeah.
The next go around.
That's tight. It's crazy though how the boxes are small, but they take up so much space.
Yeah, you know, a lot of space. Yeah. So I'm fixing up my garage, right? And I got these, I guess like shelves. And I'm looking at them. I'm like, oh man, this is gonna be plenty of space for all kinds of stuff. I went through like half the box. I'm like, holy shit! Like all these, I don't have any space anymore. Like I gotta do another shelf.
It's crazy because it's almost like when you get into like collecting shoes. And you want to keep the box and everything.
And
they start stacking up, and then you're like...
Yeah, those boxes take up a lot of space. Trust me, I'm in the shoe game too, man. And I had a whole, when I first bought this house, pretty much I had my wife gave me a room, which was like, all right, cool, you can use this as your closet. And I kid you not, like, it was just full of shoes, and it was just all the shoe boxes taking up a whole wall.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I'm in the business, so... I have to keep those boxes because it affects the resale on these shoes. So if I can't just throw away the boxes, because like it could be up to like $50 less that I can get for that pair of shoes.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like somebody will be like, you know what? I'll take those shoes, and then you're like, all right, cool. And it's not like you're just gonna put them in a bag. They're gonna be like, you got the box?
Right. Exactly.
By the way, you know, it's like I tossed it. It's like, dang.
And you know, then the crazy part is some of these people, like, I don't know if it happens with kits a lot, because I sold a couple of them. Like I said, when I went through them, I kind of started cutting back on some of these. I sold some on eBay, and one of them, I think it was like a Honda, one of those old school Civics, and the box was pretty jacked up. I mean, it got smashed, and I'm kind of like, oh, I wonder if they're going to trip out on the box being, like, smashed. Because when it comes to the sneaker game, sometimes they get pretty crazy about the boxes being smashed. I'm like, bro, you're not wearing the box. You're wearing the shoes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Same thing with the boxes. I'm like, you're not building the box. You're building the parts inside of it, you know? But man. So I didn't have any issues with those kits. But like I said, I was worried about it the whole time. We're kind of like, oh, you know, they're going to try to return them, saying that the box was damaged or whatever. Uh-huh. But luckily, everything went good on them. So.
Nah, yeah. Yeah, because back then, the only time I was ever like starting to get a little heavy on the shoes was when they had those Nike Dunks. This is early 2000s.
Yeah.
I think before they turned into like Nike SB, like the skate shoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I remember, did you ever come out here to like North Hollywood area or just Hollywood, and there would be a store called Workman's? It's like a graffiti store / urban, and then there was like a record store called Fat Beats. It was
I know Fat Beats.
It was on Melrose. This was like the second location of Fat Beats. But we used to, with my friends in high school, when we were seniors, we used to drive out there and we used to hit up like the stores and pick up like whatever Nike Dunks were out. And I remember they were busting out like three colored ones. And we were like, fuck, we got to get those. But they were selling them for like $150 and we would buy them. And then later we would go to like another store at the mall and we would find like a different color scheme for like $75.
Yeah.
And then we're like, wait, what? But it was crazy because not a lot of people were wearing them. And then you started seeing like artists wearing them at shows and all kinds of people. And then we were like, dude, like me and my friends were getting crazy in the way with those.
Yeah.
Those boxes, though, they were taking up so much space, like under my bed and the closet. And once I was done, like, I was like, all right, I'm not into shoes no more. Like, I'm going to stop. Like, years later, now I'm like, man, this problem came back with the boxes haunting me, you know? But now it's model cars. Right, it's not shoes.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm like, dang.
Yeah, you think, you know, like, and as sturdy as the boxes originally look on the brand new, whether it comes to the shoes or the model kits, they don't hold up once you stack a bunch of them on top for some reason. Like, although, and like, the weight starts to add up.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're thinking, like, you know what? I mean, it seems pretty sturdy, but you add like 10 boxes on and all of a sudden they're collapsing. So, like, the weight starts to add up. And you're thinking, like, they're just kits. I mean, how much do they really weigh?
Yeah.
But they get smashed. Yeah. Somehow they start to cave in on themselves.
I saw this, there's this girl who's a model builder, but she doesn't build model cars. She builds like those, like, the Gundam Gunpla robots.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And she, showed a picture of the way she stores all her kits that she hasn't even built yet. And the boxes that these Gundams come in, they're even bigger. They're more like rectangle, like really oddly shaped.
Yeah.
And they're very slim, but they're just huge. And what she was doing was she was taking everything out and putting all the parts in a Ziploc bag.
Okay.
And then she would cut out, I mean, she'll throw in the instructions in there too, but then she would also cut out like a piece of the, like the
box art or something.
Yeah. The box art, the cover or whatever. And not the whole thing, but just like a small little piece and just kind of just tuck it in there.
To identify it.
Yeah, dude. And she had like so many of those things bagged up and she just had them in one big plastic bin.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, like, man, like, at some point, because there's some kids that I know I'm not going to, like, get rid of or resell.
Yeah.
So, and it's not going to bother me either, like, if I cut up the box and just kind of throw all the pieces in a bigger Ziploc bag or something just to kind of consolidate everything.
Right.
Because, dude, it's like, I got kids here where I'm at, and then I got kids back at my parents' pad. They don't say nothing, but still.
So I was going to say, they're probably at some point going to tell you, like, hey, where are you going to come get these
out? Yeah, they're going to be like, hey. Yeah, they're gonna be like, hey, dude, you better get them. We left them in front of the pad. You know? It's like, they're just there. So it's, I don't know. I gotta figure something out, you know?
Yeah.
And that car that Pancho painted, how long did he take for you to get that?
I gave it to him at the NNL West. We had kind of discussed it for a while. I knew what color I wanted the main body to be. I think I hit him up sometime, I want to say over a year and a half ago about it. And he was like, yeah, I'll do it, you know. But like I said, I was kind of in the process of moving. And, once I kind of stashed it away, I'm kind of like, oh, I really don't want to get in there just to get that kit to get it to him. And then when I moved again, when I went through all my kits, I'm like, I started pulling some of these out and I'm kind of, you know what, I'm going to hit up Pancho again. And I met him up at NNL West and I gave him the kit there. So he told me, he was pretty straight up. He's like, hey, listen, you know, I got this, all this work coming in, so I probably won't get to it until about April. And I'm like, well, that's cool. No rush. You know, take your time on it. I'm not trying to, you know, I know not to rush artists on stuff like that. I leave artists alone. So I pretty much gave him the color that I wanted. And I shot him like a bunch of pictures of cars that I seen. And then I told him, banner, they just do your thing on the banner, man. Like, do your thing. Whatever colors you want, you know, as long as it looks good with the color. And, you know, he stuck to the timeline and got here just in time. I was trying to finish it by the time that our show comes around.
Yeah. Damn, that's tight.
But it came out, like I said, pictures do not do this car justice. And it seems like a lot of them. You got to see some of these cars in person when it comes to some of these patterns. I was looking at yours. I just got the dedicated magazine.
Oh yeah,
and feature on the horn. I mean, I'm sure it's been at my old house, my old address, but you know, I had to go to my parents to pick it up. And so I was flipping through it, and I seen your horn, and I'm like, well, it's cool. You know, cool pictures. None against it, but I'm just kind of like, man, it looks way better in person. Like the depth on the candies and everything just looks, you can't capture that on camera, no matter how good a photographer or camera it is. Sometimes you just gotta see them in person. Same thing with ghost real cars.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things for sure. Like, you gotta see them. They they make an impression and like an impact on you when you see them. You're like, what the hell? And then you spend time, you're staring at them, you start noticing little things, the details and stuff. And yeah, it's crazy. It's cool. It's I feel like if you're putting in all that work for into your car, then at some point it gets to where you got to think about the presentation too.
Right.
Like that's something that's been kind of rattling in my head too, is a presentation. Like I just been used to just focusing on the car and that's it. And then just kind of putting it out. And I've had people hit me up on messages telling me, or even comments going like, hey, why don't you paint a panel too?
And lay
like the same colors or same kind of scheme or art that will go with your car. And I'm like, you know what? That's true. Like I always, either I get like a little display that has a mirror and stuff, or kind of just kind of like basic kind of stuff. That's okay. But I'm just thinking like, well, if I can get all this other stuff and I have the paint and stuff, why not just go for it too?
Yeah.
And spend some time like on it. Cause I've never done that. I've only just used like the foams and all this other stuff. But I feel like now I want to, start adding some more like painted panels that I could like put the car on top of.
And it adds to it. It does. I mean, cause it's one thing for it to just see it on the table. And then when you see it presented a certain way, you're kind of like, oh, okay, cool. So now it gives even more to look at, you know, besides just the actual car. Now you're looking around, you're like, okay, cool. If they got mirrors underneath, all right, cool. You can see the undercarriage and all that. Mm-hmm. So it does give it the viewer a little bit more to look at when it has a presentation besides just sitting on the table.
Yeah, to me, it trips me out. And I'm amazed by Poncho, like how so many paint jobs he does, so many different colors. And it's like a lot of, I think a lot of people should be like looking at what he's doing, like his paint jobs. You know, especially if you're kind of stuck and you need some inspiration and you don't know what you want to do to your car. You know, take a look at what he's doing. Like his paint jobs are crazy. Like I love his stuff, and he works fast. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, when he sent me pictures and he posted some on his page or whatever, and I seen it, and I'm kind of like, damn. My brother was here, and like, damn, you see your car? That's gotta be your car, right? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, that's kind of the color that you know that I wanted. And then you see them in the pictures; they look badass. And then I get it at the house, and I take it apart, and I'm like, holy shit! Like it looks way better than the picture showed it. Hey, I was just amazed.
Yeah, dude, it looks beautiful for sure. I had seen when you guys had posted it on Instagram, and I was like, wait, what? Like, dang, I can't wait to see that one there.
And see, this was a car that I've been stuck on it for a long time. I was trying to model this car. Growing up, my dad had we never got to see it, and I think he had it. Wait, I don't know if it was before we were born, but he had a 67, and it was a brown color, and he used to tell us all these stories about this car, right? So when I found the kit, I'm kind of like, you know what? I kind of want to do it. Like if I were to have this car now, like I still kind of want to go with the color that he would describe to me that he had on it. Mm-hmm. But I would want to make it like my version of that car that he had.
Yeah.
So that's why I knew I had the color. The color was going to be that color no matter what. Like I said, it was just going to be about the pattern, letting Poncho do his thing on the pattern, not putting any restrictions on him and just letting him go at it.
Yeah, just giving them that creative freedom.
Yeah.
Do his thing.
Yeah, an artist work better when you give them that freedom. When you want to get specific with them, they really don't put their best effort into it. Mm-hmm. My brother's when he was doing graphic design work, and he loves doing graphic designs. And when he used to work at a graphic design place, he would tell me like, oh, you know what I hate is when they come in here and they tell you specifically what they want and you don't have any freedom to do it. You're just kind of like, all right, cool. Well, this is boring. Like they don't give you any freedom to do what you do, what you're good at.
Yeah. I could see
so
that.
So that's why anytime I commission any kind of artwork or whatever, I'm kind of like, hey, you know what? This is the main concept of what I have. Go at it, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I took some classes over at Coast Airbrush.
Yeah.
Well, not classes. It was just one class, but it was like 3 days. But it was funny because towards the last day, one of the teachers was saying that when you're working on a commission job for a customer, don't don't show them progress pics. Don't invite them to your shop to check out the car as you're working on it. Like, show them at the end when it's done, because if they see it like halfway in the process or something, it's going to freak them out. And they're going to be like, no, what are you doing? You're doing it wrong. Like, that's not the color I wanted, or it's, or wait, what's going on? And sometimes you have to layer stuff. Sometimes you have to do this and that to get to the end, you know?
Right. And they just see that other part of it.
Yup. And then they start panicking and stuff because they're spending the money. And
no, that makes sense.
And that's what, you know, it might be a car that they've been working on for a long time, and all I needed, let's say, like, was like some graphics now added to it.
Right.
And they're freaking out, like, man, this thing's gonna look crazy. But then at the end, they're like, oh, there it is. Like,
oh yeah, right.
You did it.
And whoever's doing the work, the artist, they see it. They see the finished product in their head. But as a person that's commissioned the work, you don't have the same vision that the artist does.
Yeah.
You think you might, but you really don't. And that's why you let the artist do their thing, because they'll get to their vision however they get to it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and they all have, everybody's got their own little process or whatever, but
yeah,
it's, and once you disrupt that process, you know, it kind of makes for a bad relationship when you try to commission something.
Yeah. Or you start arguing like, that's purple. That's not purple. That's purple. That's blue, purple. And like, it's just like, everyone sees it different.
Right.
No, that stuff's crazy. I was going to ask you, so your brother, David, both of you guys started together the Central Coast Scale Classic.
How
did that come up? Like, what was the motivation and kind of like that creative process to be like, you know what, let's start this?
Well, I mean, we have to go all the way back, man. Where we grew up, we're kind of in a small town, and it was very rare that we had model shows to go to. We would have local car shows and all that, and every once in a while they would have, you know, the bikes, and every once in a while they would put out a table and like they had some model cars there. But as much as we felt like we were really, really involved, like we were one of the main ones that built in our little area, like it seemed like we never really got like invited to that stuff. We just kind of like showed up, and you're kind of like, oh, they're doing model cars, how come we didn't know about this? You know, like, it would have been cool to know. We could have brought all our kids, or we could have told all our friends, you know. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like it was always somebody else doing it, and we kind of felt like excluded from that, even though we were like, we've been doing it forever. Once we got back into it again, we're in the middle of the Bay Area in LA, so we're driving either to Northern California or Southern California for shows.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, we used to come to Salinas, which is where I live now, and I used to play Little League. I remember one time when after the game, you know, you'd go eat, you'd go to McDonald's or whatever the coach takes you to, right? We went to this burger spot out here, and they were having like a little car show, and it turns out they did it like every Friday or whatever day it was. And they had cars out in the parking lot, and they had tables out there, and there was a bunch of cars. I'm like, oh crap, like there's a bunch of other people out here that do this stuff, and they have this like on a regular basis. But we were kids, you know, we couldn't get up here. It was like 40 minutes away from where we're at, so I just could never get to it. So when we got a chance, we're kind of like, hey, you know, let's try to put something together. But we're like, but we don't know if that community is still here, because we're talking about 20 plus years, you know. So that's where the opportunity came with the Dead End guys. So we're kind of like, hey, why don't we hit them up? You know, they're a local team out here that, you know, they're trying to push this area for the whole culture as far as custom cars and all that goes. And they're super cool dudes, and they didn't even hesitate once about it. They were kind of like, hey, as long as you guys put everything, do all the legwork, we're totally for it. We love to have cars and bikes and pedal cars and all that stuff out at our shows, because they were just basically having regular cars out there at the time.
Yeah, because I still, well, I mean, like how you were saying earlier that you guys make the drive either up north or down south.
Yeah.
And I still remember, you know, you guys do come out here, you know, you guys make that drive. And I mean, how far are you from, let's say, like LA area?
It's probably about 5 hours from LA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a drive, yeah. Dude. And you guys like head out like pretty early, right, in the morning?
We do missions. We'll take off like 3-4 o'clock in the morning just to get there by whatever the doors open for whatever show it is. And yeah. We try to stay as long as possible to get our money's worth out of the show, you mm-hmm. know?
No, yeah.
And then shoot back the same night for the most part. Every once in a while, like if it's an extra long one, like somewhere in a little bit further than like I think the Cadillac Fest, that one was a little bit further for us. It was like an extra hour.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of like, you know what, let's go the night before. We'll stay at a hotel though. We don't have to drive like crazy early in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
For the most part, it's within the same, you know, little route that we normally take, then we'll do a little one-day mission.
Yeah, I think that's the best move right there because it is further out there, dude, City of Industry.
Right, yeah.
It's pretty far still. Like, you can show up to downtown LA or LA area, but still, you got to head out still.
Another and hour now, forget the so. Distance. Then you got the traffic, too, to deal with. You know what I mean? I mean, that just adds on a lot more time, whether it's only supposed to, the GPS is only telling you it's like 20 minutes, 20 miles away, but it's going to take you an hour and a half to get there.
No, heck yeah.
Yeah.
It takes like forever. It's like you could be working on a model, start working on a model car by the time you get there, have it done.
Right, I know, right? Dude, it's not done. We'll just finish it on the way.
Yeah, dude, there's an old Scalotto issue that I have. And I remember I had gone on eBay and I looked up Scale Auto and I just typed in Lowrider. And back then they had released this like Lowrider edition where it was mostly about like, and the cover had a 67 Impala. And they were going to show you how to add like the trim and all this stuff to make not the non-super sport.
Okay.
And I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, this is fresh. But when I got to the very end of the book, there's like all these like ads or whatever. And there was an ad and I read the little story behind it because it showed these guys like coming out of a minivan.
Okay.
And I was like, what are these dudes doing? You know? And, it was them. They were traveling somewhere and they were all the guys in the van were model builders, very, very skillful. So they decided to do this like team, like build basically. So as they're driving, they're just saying on there that like one person was working on the engine, another one on this and on that, that they even painted the car. Like they made stops to paint the car.
That's crazy.
And all this stuff. And I guess it was like a road trip, but that was like part of the mission. Like let's try
that's cool.
Let's do this, you know? And I was like, well, that's crazy.
That's pretty cool.
Like, I mean, I don't have any plans to do any like road trips like far away, but it would be kind of crazy if like model builders, if there was four or five of them and they were driving like from California to like the East Coast.
Right.
You know, that's going to take some days to get there, but within that process, you could be probably try that out. You know?
Yeah, that sounds like a cool idea. I mean, you'd have to get the right guys to do that. They'd want to do that, but
yeah,
that would be cool.
Yeah, I always think, like, what would happen if you show up at the park with your model cars, your rattle cans, or even, like your airbrush compressor, and then you bring one of those portable generators, and you just hook everything up, and you're out there, like, painting in the park. Like, would they trip? Like, would people
trip? Probably not. I mean, in certain areas, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, if you go to a certain area where they're like, okay, man, you can't be doing this here. But, you know, like I live close to Santa Cruz, right? There's, like, they have, like, dudes painting everywhere, like, on the streets and stuff like that. So they don't, you know, certain areas, they wouldn't trip at all what you got out there, you know?
Yeah, they'd be pretty cool about it.
Yeah. They'd be like, yeah, whatever, dude. They won't even be attention to you. They'll just walk around you.
Yeah, they'll be like, what is that guy doing? If I did that, I'd probably tie, like, balloons to mine, like, just to cause more attention. And yeah, I'll be like, nah, everything's cool. Nothing's going on right here.
Don't worry about it.
Trying to not look suspect.
Right.
Yeah, so last year was the first annual event. This is the second annual one coming up.
Yeah.
And this one's going to be taking place at the Manzanita Park. I'm going to say the address. It's the 17100 Castroville Boulevard in Prunedale, California.
Right.
And so the 22nd.
Yeah, 22nd of June. So it's a couple of weeks away.
Yep, not that far.
Yeah. So last year, when we got together and decided to do it, my brother and I had kind of already thought about this idea. We're like, hey, well, how can we do this? You know, we need an audience for it. Like, you know, we don't have like this crazy large following on Instagram or any social media to where like, hey, you know, show up. We're going to bring a bunch of model cars or whatever. So I think it was at a Good Guy show. I ran to the Dead End guys out there, and that's when my brother's like, hey, why don't we ask them? You know, they already got a show coming up. You know, we can use their venue for it, you know. And sure enough, as soon as we pitched it to him, he was like, yeah, man, I'm totally down for that, you know. That was like in March, I think, and our show was in June. They always do it in June. So we really, before we were able to go with the whole, okay, let's do it, let's start the promo and all that, you know, before we knew it, it was kind of like, dude, this thing flies quick. From like March to June, it was like fast. I mean, it just came quick. So it was kind of like, it felt like people didn't have like notice to go out and either finish a build or make the trip. Cause you know, nowadays people are so busy. We're like, hey, you need weeks and weeks and months in advance to be able to plan out a trip to go somewhere if you're not from the area, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So, so this year when we're kind of like, hey, we're doing it again. Let's do it again. Let's do the promo with some time that way people can make themselves available that day and either make the trip. And it's a car show. I mean, who doesn't enjoy a car show, you know, at a Marvel car show? So,
no, yeah. I mean, last year, that was my first time at a Custom Capital show. Yeah. And also like the first time, because you know, the night before,
the pre-party,
we were at the pre-party. Yeah. When we had each other there. So that was pretty cool. Like I had never, I've always passed through Salinas, right? On the 101 going up north, but I've never exited and kind of just roamed around the city and kind of checked it out.
Right.
And that time it was the first time, rolling up there and kind of got to see, a side of it, and just to see how many people were out there, like supporting Dead End, and just like you could see the community of people that were like enjoying themselves, seeing all the cars that were cruising, and just kind of just hanging out, chilling.
Right, it's a cool scene, huh? And they have a large following, man, and you could tell when they do their events, and like I said, for a small little area where they're at, I mean, they get big support from the local car clubs or any guys that have cars that come through. And like I said, anytime they say like, hey, we're having a get together, whatever, people show up to whatever it is that they do. So, cause they got that support.
Mm-hmm.
And dudes are super cool dudes. And so it's easy to support, you know, people like that.
Yeah.
So it's not just because it's Dead End, it's like them, you know, it's part of them. So they go out and support them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it's crazy. Like now everybody is somehow like connected or knows someone that knows someone, like because of it, social media.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you might not even know the person, but eventually, like, you know, you're following them and somehow they start following you back. And as time goes, they start to kind of get familiar. They see your post or you and they get familiarized. And then finally, it comes to a point where you're gonna cross paths at an event, and you're like, "Dude, that's you!" Or like, "Holy crap, you know, you're there." Like, "Hey, like, what's up?" You know, and it it's like a big icebreaker at that point,
right?
You know,
right? And you know, and that goes for the Dead End guys. Like I said, I had been following Dead End for some time now, and I always assumed they were from the LA area because I didn't know they were from Salinas. And when I found out that they were from Salinas and they were opening up their flagship here in town, I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna go chop it up with them. Like, I never knew they were from this area. I always thought they were from LA. And they told me the same thing. They're like, yeah, everybody thought they were from LA, you know. And, but they've had that support from a while, from whenever they started their business.
Mm-hmm.
And people show up from wherever it is to go support them. And they go all over the place too to do their shows. I mean, you'll see them down south all the time at all the major shows down there.
Yeah.
So they're traveling all the time too. So you'll run into those guys, and pretty much everybody knows them. If you're in the car scene, you know, you either have ran into him or ran across from him being in the same area, but like I said, that happened to me with them, you know, just from following them until eventually found out that, hey, man, it's from Salinas, you know. I never knew that.
Yep. I remember one time I was going up to Redwood, and I made a pit stop there, and I was hanging out, and I was picking up their one of the magazines they had just released. And when I was there, I was chopping it up with Jesus, and Juan was there as well, but then he had to take off. But I only thought, oh, I'm just going to cruise up, maybe chill for like 30 minutes or something, you know, really quick. Because I had really never, like, I always say what's up to them, or like I'll see them and stuff, but, but you know, I know they're busy and I don't want to like take up their time or something, you know, or be like bothering them. So, I don't know, this was different. This was more like just kind of really chill, relaxed setting. And I showed up and then we started talking, and then, man,
hours went by.
I don't know. I think I was there for like 2 or 3 hours, dude. Talking, and like, we were just chopping it up, and it was pretty cool. But at some point it kind of hit me and I was like, man, like we could have done a podcast right here. Like, you know? And it's like, I want to have those guys on in the future. I want to get them on as well, because I didn't follow them from the beginning or anything. Like, I used to see them on Instagram, like their posts and stuff, but it wasn't until later where I really got to see how, like, the stuff that they do, like the way they're focused on a lot of the custom cars, that I'm like, wow, like, they love the lowriders too. They post that too, but just like, and even the photography too, just the eye that they have for the cars and everything, and their videos on YouTube too. They're like amazing. Right.
They're really cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, what the heck? And then, like you said, they go everywhere. They even go to Japan and do videos out there and photography coverage. And I love their gear, dude. I was looking through my stuff in the closet. I was like, what the heck? I have so many shirts.
Yeah, you can get out of control with some of the shirts, man.
Mm-hmm. The last one I picked up was that Riviera shirt that they put out.
Yeah,
black with the yellow or the gold. Yeah. I don't know. It's like between there, but it looked pretty sick.
I know what you're talking about. I think they dropped it earlier this year.
Yeah, I had to pick that up right there. And then on top of that, they love model cars too.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, they grew up just like everybody that's into cars. You know, at some point you came across model cars. You came across somebody that did model cars. And, you know, some people stay in it for the long haul. Some people go out of it. Some people go in and out of it. And they're just one of those guys that are kind of like, okay, they used to do them back in the days. And then they just kind of, you know, they got moved on to other things.
Yeah.
You always have that in the back of your mind. They're kind of like, oh, man, I used to do that. So you still have that attachment to some of the builders or just the art in general.
Yeah, it's there. Even if, like, let's say you're not working on anything, it's still, like, cool to see. Even if someone else, you know, is doing it. And you get some ideas and get inspired. And then later when you have time, you try that out. I was going to ask you, with your brother, do you guys ever get together and, like, work on stuff? Like, build, kind of just hanging out and, like, working on stuff?
We used to, when we used to live together, when we were a lot younger. He would either paint the car, because he started getting better with painting. I'm still barely getting into the airbrush. I want to say maybe a couple months ago I bought my first airbrush. I was always still just rattle can.
Nice.
And he got into airbrushing a while back. I want to say probably like 2007, 2008, he got into that. And when he started using the spray, the airbrushing, I started noticing that the paint jobs were a lot cleaner. And I couldn't let go of the rattle can still, man. I just did not feel comfortable with the gun. Mm-hmm. And so I would have him like, hey, shoot this one. You know, I wanted this color, whatever. And then he would shoot it. And then I would, you know, do the interiors or finish putting them together. But as far as like doing a whole car, like as a project together, I don't think we ever did, because we were always doing our own builds. And I'm 4 years older, so I started out really, really young doing them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I started like at 10, he was only 6. So he wasn't even messing with them. He knew about him. He was around him and stuff, but he wasn't really like putting them together yet. You know what I mean?
Right on.
So he actually got into graphic design because of model cars.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, that was a trip. We just realized this at one of the shows because we were looking at some of the striping and stuff like that that we were seeing on some of the cars. And I remember that's how my brother got into it. And I'm like, and he was like, yeah, you know what? That's how I got into it. And, he started, I think he was trying to figure out how to do patterns and stuff like that. And I think he specifically was doing a flame paint job on a car that I had. And he started doing the masking for it. And he was like, hey, why don't I just do the patterns on a computer, right? So he went on YouTube, learned how to do like the lines and stuff like that. And he was actually printing the masking out and then just taping the piece of paper on the car. And that's how he was getting his patterns. Mm. And he started getting more sophisticated with them on the computer. Before you know it, he was doing logos and stuff like that. And he ended up going to school for graphic design. And we're like, that's crazy how the model car just doing the striping on them is what got him into graphic design.
Yeah, like provoked it right there.
Pretty much, ignited. Yeah.
Dang. So when he would design and print that out and cut it out, he was using it more like a stencil, like on
a
the
stencil,
car?
Yeah. Yeah. Man. It was pretty much a stencil. Yeah.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah. And some of them would come out clean. Some of them were a little bit more complicated to where, like, you know, we're still figuring it out, you know, how to do the different back masking and all that stuff. And, like I said, he was the one that was getting better at it. And by this time I was kind of like, oh man, it's cool. I'm still kind of into it because we still live together, but I was kind of like, oh, okay, cool, cool. And he would just show me that he was building on them. And I was like, and I'd get ideas. I'm like, oh, how about you do this? How about you do that? So I was just kind of like the idea guy, and he was actually executing the work pretty much.
Yeah.
And I didn't get back into it until 2000 when I moved to Phoenix, and going from a small town to a big city. First time I saw a hobby shop over there, because like where we have, we didn't have any hobby shops. We had Toys Galore in Salinas, and they had kids. Toys R Us had kids. But as far as a legit straight hobby shop, I never saw one until the year 2000 in Arizona.
Wow.
And they were like, you know, all over the place over there at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I was paying my paycheck either at those hobby stores or at the record stores.
Yeah.
And I was finding all these kids, Japanese kids that I'd never seen before. And it was just kind of like, so I still have them. I'm looking at them right now. Some of these kids that I still have from Arizona. And that's when I got back into it.
Yeah, it gets out of hand, huh? Like,
yeah, it does.
You just keep getting stuff and getting stuff. It starts to accumulate.
Then you think you're done, but then you see that kid that you mm-hmm. might not have even been looking for it. But you're like, oh, this is a badass kid. Like, I can't walk away without it, you know? And you weren't even looking for it. You know, you're just kind of like, sometimes you're on the certain lookout for a certain kid. You're mm-hmm. kind of going, all right, I'm going here to go look for this kid. And then sometimes you don't, the kid's looking for you sometimes.
Yeah, I've been thinking even like instead of buying stuff now, since I have stuff, I should just trade people. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause
that's what I tried doing with those kits that I had for a loop, but I was kind of into the imports. And when I was going through them all, I'm like, I'm never going to build these, man. Like, it's not that I'm not into imports. I just never really, I think I even finished one, like a Honda, I think that I had, like a Honda Accord.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taking them to shows. I'm like trying to trade them, and like people weren't really into those. So I'm like, oh, fine, I put them up on eBay. I ended up selling them for like twice as much as I thought I was ever going to get.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, somebody on eBay's into them.
Yeah. And now, like, that seems big now.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It probably has always been big, but I feel like now it's just like, I feel like every genre of model building is huge now. Like, people are just going in.
Right.
Which
makes it's a good time. It's a good time to be into it. I said technology's so good that.
Yeah,
you know, it makes everyone a little bit more excited about building.
Yeah, I was telling that to a friend the other day. I was having a conversation with them, and I was telling them, like, how lucky are we right now at this very moment to be doing the stuff we love to do, like to have that freedom. Like, if you go back and you think about it, back in the day, like, our parents, you know, it's like they just worked, and their life was just working and family. Like, right. Providing, and that's it. And hobbies wasn't even, like, a thing or whatever for some people, you know. It was just really, really, like, priorities, you know. And it's almost like they paved the way. And then now, like, we're living in this generation right now. And, I mean, there's so much technology, tools, and stuff out there that it's basically just up to you to execute it, you know.
Yeah.
But everything is there. Like, there's really nothing to hold you back. Even if you cannot afford, like, the right paint or the right tools that you want, you could still make something out of nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And, but it's dope because, like, if you get into, like, model cars and you kind of, like, figure out, like, you know what, I'm not ready for painting, or I'm not good at it as to where I want to be, you know, you can always be good at something else. Like, you can probably go deep into the engine work, or you start getting deep into, like, the interiors. Like, there's going to be something in there that you're going to find, like, you're strong or you're
to be good at. Yeah.
Yeah. Your specialty right there. And I don't know, like, back then when it came down to doing bare metal foil, the first time I was excited just because I was like, oh, I've never done it. And I started to kind of come out. I would, like, mess up and start over. But then I would notice I was biting into the paint now.
Right.
I was just, like, pressing on it too hard. And eventually I said, all right, the next one, I'm going to do it even better. But every time I got into it, I was starting to dread it. And it was holding me back from completing builds. And then I started to notice, you know what, out of everything, that final stage is, like, my weakness. Like, I need to overcome that weakness. So I just started getting more and more into it, like, making it seem like telling myself, like, no, like, that's the best part. That's the part where you, like, start to enhance your car and bring it to life.
Right.
With like the chrome and everything. So, eventually, you know, I had to kind of just put that in my head, and then I ended up, like, loving that part a lot. The bare metal foil part. And because at that point, when I'm in a bare metal foil, what I like to do is I like to clean my bench, my table, put all the tools away, put everything away, just have the pure cutting mat on there, have everything clean, no dust, no nothing, and then just have my my sheet of foil, you know, ruler, hobby knife or razor blade, whatever I'm gonna use. And then Q-tips, like, just only what's going to be used to execute that.
To focus on it.
Yeah. And then I'll say, all right, I'm just going to do the whole side of a car and chill. And then I'll look at the clock. You know, if I notice, like, it's getting late, then I'll say, like, you know what? I'll continue tomorrow, like, the other side. And little by little, you know, next thing you know, you have, like, both sides done. Then the front window, back window. If you're doing, like, the trim around, and then, you know, it's like you're done. But at the same time, I guess now I kind of tend to shave a lot of stuff off that I don't want a bare metal foil.
Like door handles and stuff like that?
Yeah. And certain trims too. I'll be like if there's a couple trims on the body, I might get rid of one or get rid of both completely. And I'll just be like, this new car that I'm doing, I'm going to add my own trim on it. Because it didn't have it. It had just the front fender, but it didn't shoot all the way back. But now I'm thinking of, like, adding it on there. So that'll be something new for me. Like, I've never really done that, like, to be adding, like, a trim to a car.
Yeah.
So I'm still new to that, but I'm having fun with it slowly, like, just attacking it.
Yeah. Once you get going into it, you get, like I said, I hadn't done it in a while until I started doing it on this Monte Carlo, and I didn't even have any bare metal foil lying around anymore. And I was in the Bay Area, stopped at a shop, I dropped off some of those flyers to the show, and I saw some bare metal foil, and I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, I'm gonna need this, right, for some of these ones that I'm working on. And I was a little nervous when I pulled it out. I'm kinda like, oh crap, like, you know, this is the first airbrush paint job that I have on it, and it's not the greatest, but it looks pretty decent for being my first airbrush paint job. And I'm like, I really didn't want to ruin it. And it's been so long since I did bare metal foil that it actually came out really, really good. My hands aren't as steady as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very pleasantly surprised on how good it came out. And I think it came out better than I used to do them back in the days for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I felt like I was a little bit more careful because of the paint, but it wasn't stressful. I remember used to being stressed out doing the bare metal foil because, like you said, you ruin the paint job sometimes. But this time I was just kind of more of like, okay, I think I could do this this way, and it might, you know, it might come out better. And for some reason, it came out really good on this one. But like I said, it's been over 20 years since I did my bare metal foil.
That's tight. Yeah, the one of the ones that I had that I was like checking at the paint every time I was hitting it with my knife was it was a 61 Impala that I painted purple, but I never cleared it. And then once I added the bare metal foil, I didn't even think about re-clearing the whole thing at all.
Dang, dude. That's one thing that I never did on my old cars. I never cleared them after. For some reason, that was like my final, that was the finishing touch to me. Mm-hmm. And when I went back and started looking at somebody that had, you know, they had the gold metal foil.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I popped up the boxes and the gold is like gone, like what the heck happened to the gold? Like, it's just... You can just see, like, it looks like it's like stained chrome on it now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wonder if it's because of the clear, because it never got cleared over.
Wow. Yeah, there was some paint. It was in testers. I think it was called Boyd. Or there was like another brand of paint. And there's a 67 Impala that I have, and I remember going to Walmart to pick up Rattle Cam paint for that. And I remember, like, spraying the body. I remember opening the kit, and, like, at that time, I didn't know about that you had to wash the model car or that you had to scuff it, sand it. I didn't even own, like, sandpaper at all at the time. And then I just remember, you know, shaking up the can really good and then just being like, all right, it's ready. And just spraying the car wet, like, with the paint. Just like doing the sides, the top, and then the inside, everywhere. I was just hitting it. And like the car was like wet, and I wouldn't even let it dry. You know, like coats, I would no coats. Right. Like, it was like a single coat, just shaking it.
Coming out the hell of thick.
Hell yeah, dude. And it wasn't showing any signs of it dripping or anything, but I did hit it with a lot of paint. And then I would just leave it out for it to dry. And every time I would come back and I'll look at it, and I was always tempted to touch it. I always wanted to touch it, you know, but I wouldn't. And I was like, oh, it looks dope. It's shiny, you know? And I didn't know anything about clear coats. You know, I didn't know that you had to put that stuff over your car to protect your paint.
Right.
I just thought, oh, this is how it is. And that car, I still have that car, and once in a while, I bust it out, and I just stare at it, and I go, man, like, I still trip out on this paint, because it's still there, but there is some areas, especially around, like, where the door handle is, and the crease, or the panel line of the door and the body, that the paint in those areas, it's like, fading, and you could, it's like, you can still see the turquoise, but it's see-through now. and the thing too is that now you're starting to see like kind of like the bare plastic, because I didn't even shoot no primer on that thing.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. It's weird. Like, I'm sure if I took it apart and I threw it in like the purple power thing, that paint's gonna slide off quick.
Slide right off, yeah.
Yup.
Yeah, because it's not being held on by anything.
Yeah, nah, dude, and I still have it. Like, I still have the model. It's in the closet. Every so often, I bring it out, and I just like take a look at it, and I go, man, I still remember at that time. I was like, man, this is the best car I've ever done. I was so happy, dude. I was like, man, I love this car.
And you know, I never felt good about a paint job until I started going to spray cans, because I actually would do brush painting. I would paint with a brush. With the tester little bottles.
Yeah.
And before that, it was like nail polishes.
Uh-huh.
You know, before we had any of this stuff. This is what I'm talking about. When I was little, we used to paint them with nail polishes from one of the neighbor's sister's nail polishes. Like, hey, give me all the cool colors, the candy-looking ones, you know?
Yeah.
And we just painted with the nail polish. Of course, it was a horrible-looking paint job, but it had a cool color on it.
Mm-hmm. I've never painted with the nail polish before. I've heard people use them for sure.
You know, I heard I think it was at NNL West. I heard like an older couple. I'm talking about, like, I mean, gray hair and all that. I mean, he was an old guy, and I'm assuming it was his wife. They were looking at I think it was your guys' table where you guys had all your cars set up. And I kind of overheard the lady say, like, well, I mean, you can keep using my nail polishes, but I don't think they're using nail polishes anymore, honey. She tells the man. And I'm like, wow, that would trip. Like, this guy's still painting with nail polishes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He wants nail polishes.
Oh, man. You know,
well, hopefully he asked somebody and he got it, you know, he got an answer.
Yeah, the one who tripped me out, I always assumed he was using like House of Color paint with his paint jobs was Richard Cabral. I don't know if you ever met him.
I never met him. I've heard the name, but
yeah.
I never met him.
And he doesn't live that far from Oxnard. He's pretty close. But I remember seeing his work and just being amazed, like, wow, like this guy's from Santa Paula and he's killing it, you know?
Yeah,
He lives super close to me. And I hadn't met him before, but we were following each other on Instagram. And I remember there was a time where I asked him like some questions about House of Color because I was fairly new to that at the time. And I remember hitting him up but not hearing from him, you know. And I didn't get offended or anything, you know. I was just like, oh, maybe he's busy or something, you know.
Right.
But then as time passed, finally we got to meet. And then we were talking one day and I was asking him about a bomb he did. And I was like, hey, so what kind of paint you use on that? And I thought he was going to start telling me, oh, I use like House of Color, this and that. And he just said, no, he's like that one. And this other one I did those with nail polish.
Crazy.
I'm on, no way, dude. Am I for real? He's like, yeah. And then I was just like, what the heck? And he started to say, yeah, like all these ones. I'm like, you don't buy House of Color? You don't use that? And he's like, he said, no, I don't. And I remember like later, like a year later or so, he started asking me questions about House of Color stuff.
Oh, no way.
So I was like, what the heck? I was like, oh, shoot. So I just started like whatever info I had on it, you know, I was passing it on to him. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he did anything after that, though. I think he was working on some stuff, and then he just kind of stepped away from it. And
how did those look though with that nail polish? I mean, they were that good to work.
They look dope, dude. That to me in my eyes, I was like, wow, this is like some like House of Color stuff. Like there was like fades and.
That's the good thing about, I mean, those nail polish. Cause like my wife is in that business, and sometimes I look at her wall and the paints, and I'm like, damn, these are badass colors, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll go in there and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to need this one right here. I just haven't used it yet because I don't know how to cut it yet, you know?
Yeah.
Like how much to put in it. So, because there's no instructions on how to mix it with nail polish.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I haven't met anybody yet to tell me.
No, I haven't met anybody.
The proper way to like reduce it.
Right.
To have it ready to spray for your airbrush. So I'm not sure if you should just use regular like lacquer thinner from like Home Depot or I don't know if maybe you could use House of Color reducer.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure the lacquer thinner might work
on that. Yeah, like I said, I got to get used to the airbrush first before I can tap into something a little bit more advanced like that, but
yeah. What is
it? I'll figure it out.
What do you think it's about the airbrush that maybe it's holding you back? Is it just the way when you hold it or
now it's because I'm so used to the can, you know, it's completely different shape, you know, like where just how to even hold it, you know, I'm getting used to that. The pressures, trying to figure out how to adjust the pressures to certain paints. Cause some of the paints will actually tell you, you know, to spray it at this or whatever.
Yeah.
But so I end up spraying like a bunch of like, you know, cardboard just to test it out, just to figure it out. But I think that's mostly what it is the pressure. I don't want to like shoot too much of it in certain areas. I don't know how to, there's a bunch of different tips, size tips and all that stuff. So I still got to figure all that out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll figure it out with more practice. But I do like how it's more contained as far as like the spray can. Like I felt like the spray can would get all over the place. And as you have those tips, you know, where you can switch out the tips for the cans. But even then, you'd have to go set a graffiti shop, and we don't have any of those around here either. Mm-hmm. You know,
when I started to like lay down just like a regular like base color on a car,
yeah,
with the airbrush, I remember using an Iwata HPCS. It's the dual action, double action, and I remember having some issues because I was still like new to it. So every time I was like just pulling the trigger, pushing it down and pulling it back, and then I would let it go, kind of like snapping it. I wasn't doing it right. Okay. I was like tiger striping it, but then later,
that's the one I have.
As time went on, one of my buddies told me, like, no, you need to always like have the air go flowing all the time, like always have like push it down so you always have air, and uh-huh. then just pull it back slowly so your paint, you know, keeps it's coming out. You go from one side to the next, but when you go to one side, like you can like go back forward, but don't like completely take your finger off. Like you always have,
because it throws it off again. Huh?
Yeah, you always want to have that air flowing all the time, and then so you pull it back, you start your paint starts to come out, and then you know you push it forward, and then you kind of close it, and so it's like an on and off switch kind of thing, but it's flowing the way you're doing it. But I remember like not knowing, I was just like kind of snapping my finger. I kept doing that, and then I would pull it all the way back in some sections, and then in some other areas I wouldn't. So my flow of paint was really weird and really off on these bodies. So then I went on Iwata's website and I said, you know what? Let me see what's another alternative that will give me the same result as a rattle can. Because before I jumped into this, every time a rattle can, I would, you know, do a kind of like a, like you lay over, you know, like a 75% or whatever. And I was
yeah.
cool. Like I got it done with like four passes going up, starting from the bottom. So why am I struggling with this airbrush? So it turns out on their website, they have a series called Revolution, and they have these, they make single action airbrushes. So with the single action, all you do is you just press down, and the paint comes out. It's the same. It's like simulating like a spray can, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
But in with the airbrush, and they're smaller too. So it's like half the size of your airbrush. And I picked up the M1, which has a smaller size cup, and I believe it's a 0.3 size needle. And then later I picked up the M2, or maybe the other way around. I picked up the M2, the one with the bigger cup.
Okay.
And that one has a bigger size cup, and the needle size is a 4. And that's the thing that tripped me out, because like the HPCS, like the one you have and I have, that one generally is sold like as a 0.3. And then obviously, yeah, you could open it up when you pull it back for it to shoot a little more, but you can also buy like the needle and like the crown and everything and configure it, so now you turn it into like a 0.5.
It's
even bigger, you know, what you're shooting out, the size. And what I like about these M2 that I have, now I have a 0.4. So it's, because a lot of them that I've seen, I haven't come across a 0.4, but that one there. And I like it because that's what I tend to use most, that the single action, when I'm going to lay down like a base color, because I want it just to like look uniformed and flow. And I don't really care, you know, if people feel like, oh, you need to be pro, you need to be shooting with a double action. You know, it's almost like whatever gets the job done at that point.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, it's whatever's working for you, man. That's all that really matters.
Yeah, like I like using the double action when I clear coat. For sure, because
I did one pass on the clear on this one, and it seemed like it was a lot easier for me to do that. With that gun,
because I like controlling the flow of it when I have to do like the door jams or certain areas where like if around the trunk or the hood where I want to have clear in there but not a lot, and then I can just blast the body with a lot of clear to make it just flow out better and be thick.
But
it has its benefits. You know, down the road, you might want to check out that airbrush.
Yeah, well, definitely. Like, I got to get used to just in general using the airbrush, and I'll definitely invest in something better, something that would work for me and what I want to use it for.
No, yeah, definitely. Are for the going back to the show that's going to be on the 22nd, are you guys going to be there like pretty early that morning?
That one would probably will be there that early because there's a couple things that I've been talking to Amandro about as far as the table setup. We were thinking of doing a like a miniature version of the park. So the main car show set at it's in a park. I thought it's like a, it used to be a, I'm sure still it is like a, I think it's like 3 or 4 baseball fields out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all on grass and dirt and all that. So we were kind of thinking of doing the tables where we're going to set the cars to make it look like a miniature version of that park.
Nice.
So all the cars will be like on grass and dirt and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it looks just like the actual car show. So yeah, we might have to go out there a little earlier to get that set up just for the tables to put the cars on.
Yeah. Damn, that's tight. Nah, it should be fun. All right, do you know if they're going to be doing a party again the night before?
Yeah, they actually, I just talked to them a couple days ago, and I think they confirmed that. I think they posted it somewhere on one of their social media accounts. Mm. They are going to do it. It's kind of, it was fun. That's the first time I ever did it. Like I said, it was really fun just getting to hang out there and at the store. It's a real cool store. It's a small store, but it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You can see all the artwork there. And yeah, I mean, you know, Armando, and you brought up the Whittier Boulevard last year to that party. And it was a trip seeing it in there because, like I said, it looked like a kind of in a gallery type setting.
Yeah, that was a fun time, dude. I still remember, like, making the drive, heading out there, getting there in on a rush. Like, we got to set up, you know? and then, well, another thing that was pretty rad is that their event was sponsored by 805.
Yeah, that's one of their major sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
So they hook them up all the time for their events.
Heck yeah, they had a barrel full of beer.
Yeah,
thing was gone, and then they refilled it, and then again, dude.
And I don't know if you've seen, but they just got they did like a limited edition can for them.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah,
with the Dead End logo. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool too.
That was that's one thing on the list I'm trying to get actually my hands on. Are they selling that in stores?
Yeah, but I think they're doing it like in certain demographics. Like they're going by certain areas, mm-hmm. And I thought that it was like a whole case full of their cans, and then like a whole case full of whatever. Because I think they did like 4 brands. Or 4 other companies that they did these cans for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking it was a case for like every brand or every company. But I guess what they did is they mixed them into one case. So you might get a case and it might not have.
Oh, okay.
One of them might be missing. So it's kind of like a hit and miss on them.
Yeah.
So I've been seeing people like on Instagram posting them like, oh, cool, I found one that has the Dead End one.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
So it kind of makes you kind of... Make you go on a hunt for them, pretty much.
Yep. Dang, it brings in the collector out of everybody, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I was just at their store a couple days ago, and some guy went in there. He's like, "Oh man, I've been looking for it. You know, is it cool if I get this one?" And he's like, "Yeah, man, I should take that one." He's like, "We're running out though, man. We don't have that many left."
Yeah, because they've had some, right? Like just the singles.
Yeah, like they had some at the shop. Yeah.
Oh, that's tight, dude. Heck yeah. I know. I was thinking about that. If I come up on a can, like, should I just keep it sealed or should I just drink it and just, you know?
People are keeping it sealed unless you have a bunch of them. But from what I know, it's turned into like a little collector's piece.
Yeah. No, I think, yeah, definitely, dude. That's, I could see that. Like having that and just saving it. Because it is a big part of the car culture.
Right.
Right there.
Yeah, I guarantee you at the show you'll see a bunch of cars with the can displayed inside of them somewhere or next to it or something. I guarantee you'll see that.
Yeah, you never know. They might even bring some probably because they're going to be there as well, right? 805?
I'm pretty sure they. Yeah, they always do a sponsorship because they do. I think they do one of their awards, their picks. They usually get to pick a car, so I'm sure they'll be there.
That's cool. How far are you going up north towards like San Francisco?
Well, San Jose is, you know, over there, Santa Clara, where the NNL West is the furthest north I've been for a model car show. As far as like actually San Francisco and all that, I I don't know if there's too many of them out there. I mean, there's like a lot of meetups and stuff like that. Guys just will say like, hey, we're meeting up here or whatever. But as far as like a major show, I think there's a Bombs one happening sometime soon too up there. The Bombs magazine or something like that. I think they're doing one up there. But I really haven't been up there to those higher up in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Yeah, because the NNL one's always fun. That's a...
You know, this is the first year that I went to. I've always been out of town for that event. I'm always like traveling or out of the state or country when that one goes down. And this was the first year that I specifically planned on going anywhere just to make it. And it was awesome, man. It was just what I expected, man. It was badass.
Yeah, and last year, I just remember right now, last year I missed you at SEMA. I didn't get to see you out there, but you were out there.
Right, yeah, that's kind of a thing I do every year. One of my buddies gets us in every year. I think I've been going for 10 plus years.
Wow.
So SEMA's a kind of a tradition for us to go check out every year. And that was awesome seeing you guys' stuff out there, man, that you guys got recognized for something like that, where you guys had a big audience where typically people wouldn't see your guys' stuff like that, you know. Every time I went, yeah, I mean, I checked it out pretty much every day that I went. I used to go every day, and there was always a big crowd around there checking out all your guys' cars.
Oh, man. Thanks, dude. Yeah, shout out to Armando Serrano and Iwata for that. That was
a cool idea. Yeah.
That was my first time, dude, ever going.
It's a crazy experience,
Yeah,
a big event like that.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to stay an extra day, dude, but I couldn't. I had to head back for work, so I was like there, like for the day, that first day where it's like more like a setup day. It's not
the setup day.
Yeah, and then
was that like a Monday or Tuesday? It was Monday.
The Monday, yes. And then I was there the first, like the opening day of the Tuesday, but by the time my initial plan was like I'll stay till it ends and then drive home.
Right.
But I had to work the next day because we were getting busy at work. And it's like, it was one of those things I said, you know what? I'm going to have to leave at noon because by the time I get home, it'll probably be 6, 7 p.m. And then by then I still will have like a couple or a few hours to chill.
Yeah.
And then go to sleep. Right. You know, and then just be ready.
And at least it's close. I mean, what was it, like 4 hours, maybe 5 hours from where you're at?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Drive. Yeah. Yep. So even that for me, I mean, I just take a plane, right? Because this is too far of a drive for any of that.
Dude,
stuff.
We're for talking you,
like 10 hours for us.
For you, yeah, dude, definitely. That's far.
Yeah, but I love going to that show. It's one of my. I look forward to that show every year, not just because I get to see my friends that I only see once a year. I only see those friends once a year for SEMA. That's the only time I see that group that I go with.
Yeah. Do they all live like they're all pretty spread out?
Well, they all live like in the Fresno area.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's say that we only talk usually when leading up to SEMA, when we're getting our stuff together. We're like, hey, who's staying here? Where are we staying at? Did you get to fly? And then of course that week of SEMA, and then we'll, you know, talk for a few weeks after the show, still going over the show stuff. And then we kind of lose touch until the next year comes around the same time. It's kind of our tradition.
Yeah. And there's a lot of cars that stand out too.
And you know what? Sometimes from all the 10 years that I've been there, I still don't think I've seen the whole show. The whole entire show. It's so much.
Yeah.
Because every time I get back and I start watching the TV shows on Velocity and all that, and they always do the SEMA specials, and they're showing this car, and I'm like, well, what the hell? I didn't see that car. Like, where was that car? You know, and then they're showing the whole background. I'm like, man, I missed that whole wing. I didn't see any of those cars. Like, how did I not see them? I was there every day for a week. Every year happens to me.
I remember the one car I wanted to see so bad. It was that. Remember they kept on Instagram showing glimpses of it, and then the whole thing was that 58 Impala that was all engraved.
Oh yeah.
And was it even painted? It just looked like it was all like chrome or silver, like the whole car.
Yeah, I'm not too sure how they do it because I know that whoever did that one, they did a GTR last year at SEMA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same, you know, all with that. I don't know what it is. If it's like, it looks like it's bare metal and it's like engraved the whole
right?
time.
Yeah, it's all shiny, it's all polished.
Good. Yeah.
And I remember like the night before, because you know how the SEMA has like an app you can download.
Oh yeah, for the map.
Yeah, and you can kind of create, like you can pick out all these spots you want to look at, and right. then it kind of can map it for you how to get there.
Right, right.
And I was like, all right, who brought out that car? Like, who is he sponsored by, or what booth is he going to be in?
Right.
Finally, I find it, and it's showing it. Like, I see, okay, the entrance is right here. This is where the Iwata booth is at. And then after that, I'm like, damn, that's way in the back.
It's way on the other side, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, all right, cool. Well, you know, early morning, wake up, show up, and then mob on over there, you know?
Right, right.
Dude, like, I probably made it to, like, the second building. Or no, I was inside, and then I went outside to where the Helderado was at.
Okay.
And you know how they're doing like a show where cars are like peeling out and doing all this stuff.
Oh, in the in front. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I only made it to there. and by the time I got there, I was like looking at my map, going like, dude, this ain't even halfway point.
No, you're not even halfway, yeah.
At all. And there was so much people. It was crowded, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to see that car. Like, I'm going
to turn. Oh, so you didn't get to see it?
Nah, dude. I got food, we chilled, and then I said, nah, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go back.
Yeah, well, like I said, that's kind of, like I said, a reason that it feels like I never get to see everything is just because, first of all, you're in Vegas, so you're partying all night. You know, if you can make it to wake up early, you know, you're just shot out from partying all night. That you're kind of like, all right, by 3 o'clock, you're like, oh, man, I need to go take a nap or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you come back and do it again the next day. And then there's so many people. So then it takes you forever. Then you start meeting people. You start chopping it up with people. Before you know, you're talking to them for an hour. And you're kind of like, oh, man, I never got to the booth that I wanted to get to because I was chopping it up with this dude or whatever.
Yep. And it's cool because you also see, like, whatever hotel you're staying at that's near, the SEMA, everyone's wearing their badge, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like you kind of, like, at first I was a little lost. Like, I drove by SEMA, but I was like, where's the entrance, or where's everyone going, you know?
Right, right.
And then, but like, people were driving up and stuff, but then eventually later I saw people like kind of mobbing it, walking over there. So I was just kind of like, all right, I'm just going to follow these people, you know?
Were you staying anywhere near there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What were you staying?
Yeah, man, I can't remember the name. It's like, I think LSS or something. It's like down the...
Oh, okay.
I think that's the name. I'm not sure, but it's like right there, dude. It's like a block away. It's not even far at all. And I would walk back and forth. I would never get tired. It was like cool. And and then there was a CVS around there too, so you can get like whatever, you know, sodas, beer, whatever you needed. Like it was convenient area right there, dude.
I think I stayed there 2 years ago. I think I stayed at that hotel, and it's pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty close. It's walkable. Distance,
and they have there. And they have one of those I don't know, like a Metrolink chain train or whatever.
Oh yeah, the one that goes above it.
Yeah, that thing reminds me of that one from Disneyland.
Never been Disneyland, man, so I never.
Oh yeah, they have this one that looks all futuristic. It's just like a tube, and it's just roaming around the whole park. That's what it looks like. But in Vegas,
you know, that's crazy about Nashville and Vegas is like you see those people like all over Vegas. Like you said, not just in your hotel, but like you go to the casino and it's like you see those badges. Everybody's wearing those badges all over town that week.
Mm.
And that's what everybody like. They hit you up and you're like, "Where are you from? I'm from here." Oh, cool. What are you here for, SEMA? Like everybody's like knows that that's like what's happening that week.
Yeah,
and that you're there for that. The same thing starts at the airport. I know every time I go to the airport, you see the guys wearing all the shirts with a car on it. You're like, well, he's going to SEMA. You know what they're going to Vegas for. They're going to SEMA. You know what I mean? He's got a Chevy t-shirt on. He's going to SEMA.
Yeah. That's tight. Do you, you know, like the first time when you went there, did you come back bringing a lot of stuff? Like, you know how they give free magazines?
Man, I think I had to get a whole extra luggage just for all the free stuff. And I still got some of that stuff. All the samples, magazines, and brochures and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the little takeaways where they give you the pens and the tire pressure things.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, because each company, I mean, they're there to promote, bring awareness to their product.
To the brand,
And they bring all – I'm assuming every year they probably have something different to give away, like a little knick-knack or whatever.
Yeah, for the most part. Uh-huh.
You know, but yeah, what I tripped out on when I was walking is, I think it was like the second building. I saw all these little cubbies, right? And I saw this dude going like bananas, like stacking magazines, like bam, grabbing them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Grabbing them. And I was like, is this fool working here? I thought he was stocking the shelves or something, you know?
Yeah.
But I saw he just kept grabbing, like, oh, damn, three of this one, or pass up on some. Oh, what? Loiter magazine. Boom, five of these.
Yep.
And I was like, what is this cat doing? And then I finally, like, I passed it. And now where I was coming back, and I looked inside, and I started to see some of, like, the magazines that I even pick up back at home, you know?
Right.
I was like, what the hell? These are free?
Yeah.
And everybody was going in. And I was like, oh, dude, I need to. So I started going in too, you know. I started grabbing magazines left and right. And then it got to the point where I was grabbing some magazines that I was like, I ain't even into this, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But I had it. I was carrying it with me. And I remember I put every, like, they give away bags and stuff too.
Right. Little backpacks and all that.
Dude, yeah. I put everything in those in that bag. That thing was heavy, dude. And I remember, like, my lady was with me, and I told her, like, hey, hold the bag real quick, or her, just put it on the side, I'm gonna tie my shoe, you know. And she just held her, because she's like, fuck, this thing's all heavy. She's like, I'm not gonna hold that. It was funny, man. And it wasn't until, like, the hotel room where I kind of looked through all this stuff.
You go through everything, yeah.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, I don't want this. So
right, and then you leave it there at the hotel.
Yup, you keep some stuff and some stuff, so I just, like, left it there.
Couple of years, I've gotten better about only taking the stuff that I know I'm going to bring home, you know? Mm-hmm. I still grab a couple magazines. I'm always going to grab the Lowriders or the Dove magazines or those Rim magazines and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always coming home. Some of the sample stuff, you know, like where they give you like the certain polish for your car or those little giveaways like that, I'll still bring home a little pack, but nothing compared to like the first couple of years where like I would literally need an extra luggage just to, for all the stuff that would come home with.
Mm-hmm.
I cut it down to like a little bag that'll fit in my backpack now.
Yeah. No, yeah, because I guess it's just that excitement, you know, in the beginning you get caught up.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, okay, you're giving it to me. All right, give me two of them or whatever, you know?
No, yeah. And then you got friends back home. Hey, bring me something.
Right.
You know?
And stickers, man. Sticker. Everybody's got those stickers. I keep an envelope, like a manila envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like busting at the seams from all the stickers that I get every year.
Yeah, damn.
All the brands and all that stuff. Yo, yeah, it's,
can't say no to a sticker. That's for
sure. No, never say no to a sticker.
Yeah, you always gotta take those. Those are always cool.
Yeah.
Dang. So Saturday, everybody, 6/22/19, Model Car Show, Central Coast Scale Classic. And if people want to register anything, where do they hit you up? Or
you can hit me up on Instagram, either on the Central Coast Scale Classic page or on my personal page. It's flash_massappeal. Actually, it's the other way around. It's massappeal_flash. Nice. The website, we were having an issue with the website there. The website was just supposed to have a downloadable registration page, and we've been having such a hard time with it. But the Dead End guy, they have it on their page. You can actually register on their website at the Dead End website. They have a link for the Custom Capital Show. You can go on there and download the registration form, and you can either do it with them on their website, or you can just bring the registration page with you the day of, or if you're going to be around the day before, if you want, come by the Dead End shop, and we'll be there for the pre-party, and come and bring the registration paperwork there.
Nice. That's dope. And also one last question.
Yeah.
When I, on your name, Mass Appeal, when I hear that and I think of that, that's also the name of your store, right?
Yeah. So it's we have a store. Well, we had a store. I closed it down a couple months ago. We're just doing online now. But yeah, we were doing it was a streetwear and sneaker clothing store here in town. And we were using that, of course, to support the show. And we're still, you know, involved with it. It's just not a physical location anymore.
Yeah. Nah. You know what? Talking about that real quick. I've been with my father. We have a flower shop.
Yeah.
And normally that kind of business is more storefront, you know, people walk in and stuff. But
right.
I'm noticing throughout the years, from when I started to now being there with them, the decline of walk-ins and the increase in online and phone
online orders. Purchases. Yeah.
So we have 2 more years on our lease, and we've been talking like, you know what? I think we're just going to complete this lease and we're going to close our doors. We're going to have to go online based.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, rent's it's a lot. It's
so
dude.
Hard with the overhead. Yeah.
Heck yeah, dude. It's like,
yeah.
I was telling my dad, like, nah, we need to make money and not be working just so we like pay overhead. Like,
pay the bills, that, yeah.
That's not the point of even going into business.
Right, right.
You know, for, I mean,
and it takes away the enjoyment of it too.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. You know, so I totally understand. Like, I know when people say, oh, like, you know, I had to close the doors and everything, people sometimes think, like, oh, man, what happened? Like, it's like sometimes that's a smart move, dude. Like, you have to do that to stay afloat.
Well, you got to analyze where money's going to. Like I said, sometimes, well, okay, cool, you got this lease, but it doesn't mean that the lease is going to expire. And, you know, the landlords, they're thinking like, hey, I can get more from either you or somebody else. Mm-hmm. So where you're paying this much rent this for 3-4 years, now your lease is up. This, the landlord wants 2 or 3 times more for the rent. Now you're kind of like, well, okay, well, the 3 or 4 times more that I got to pay for rent is the money that I was taking home. So yeah. Now it's not even worth it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then I've been reading the contract that we did, and dude, they got all, you know, they got all these little clauses in there and this and that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I already found the one that says, give us like, you have to give a year's notice that you're going to bounce.
Oh, really?
If not, it's kind of like you're still locked. You're kind of locked in a way.
Stay in for that extra year.
Yeah. Yeah, nah, hell no.
No, it's a shitty business, man, for the landlords, man. They can pretty much put whatever they want in those contracts for you, man. And like I said, they can cripple you, man. Like I said, I've been doing this since 2012, and in those, 7 years? I mean, I've seen shops close down all the time just because of the rent, just the rent alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen like the Bay Area, a certain brand that I used to carry in my store, and they used to pay $8,000 a month, and their lease expired after like 10 years, and now they want like $40,000 a month. We're like, how do you go from $8,000 to $40,000? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, they probably don't have like rent control there.
No, it's kind of
same kind of things happening in Burbank, California. They don't have in the businesses. They go from like,
yeah,
you know, 8 G's, 10 G's, and now they want 30, 40 G's. And it's like,
right, nah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, nah. And I mean, I don't know, you know, like I just told my dad, you know, things are changing and we have to stay afloat. And I know people are going to probably be shocked and trip out like, oh, you guys are, the doors are closed. It's like, nah, you call the same number, we'll still answer. We could still, you know, do your orders online.
Do your business, yeah.
Yeah. And everything's cool, you know, it's just now we have that, we don't have that stress anymore, of that overhead anymore. It's gone.
Right.
The rent itself.
It's more to it than just the rent. You're talking about bills, you know, security, like it all adds up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yo. No, yeah. And also, Mass Appeal, the name. Did you think, every time I think of that, I think of Gangstar.
Yeah, that's where it came from.
All right. Just checking. I think.
Yeah, no, my brother and I were big hip hop guys. Yeah. So pretty much anything that we do is going to involve hip hop at some.
Yep, that's cool.
Some backstory. So yeah, that's exactly where it came from.
Heck yeah.
It was tough for us to get that website though, because there's a record label too that's called Mass Appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get phone calls sometimes like, hey, I ordered this from your website, and I'm kind of, well, we don't sell that. What are you talking about? Yeah, I ordered it here and here. Yeah. And it's actually from the record label. You know, actually the record label owned by Nas.
Oh, dang.
So they're like, yeah, I got this Nas t-shirt. And I'm like, I don't have any Nas t-shirts. What are you talking about? Yeah, it's massappeal.com, right? I'm like, no, it's shop at Mass Appeal.
Yeah, I have the Mass Appeal 12-inch record on single.
Yeah.
I have doubles.
Oh, okay.
Doubles of it. I remember my homie was like, yo, when you buy singles, you got to buy doubles. Because it has instrumental radio and then just
the regular
version. But I always love the beat on that song.
Oh, yeah, classic beat.
Heck yeah. Well, all the other stuff is like crazy dope. Classic
pretty
stuff.
Much, yeah. Pretty much. Premier is one of the better producers out there. So,
yeah, I'm going to have to send you.
For inspiring us.
No, hell yeah. I'm going to have to send you some photos. I have some photos of some cassette tapes. They're of Premier's. And they say, one time I went to Chicago and I went to a record store and I bought them because it said DJ Premier unreleased, supposedly.
Oh, what?
Supposedly it says unreleased, A, and then the other tape is B. But it looks super bootleg, dude. Like, it shows him. He's wearing a hoodie, and it looks super bootleg. But I had to pick him up at the time.
Did you ever listen to it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I have cassette. I still, like, collect, like, cassette tapes and stuff.
Okay.
But I still listen to, like, stuff. I'll pop it in and just let it play. But
yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I even have anything to play a tape in anymore.
Yeah. No, there's... It's crazy. So many cassettes are coming out now. Like, they've been coming out. Like, the tape scene is pretty big right now. Also, but they keep repressing even the old hip-hop stuff. They're repressing it, too, on cassette. But, hey, dude,
Didn't Fat Beats just open back up?
Oh, yeah, they did. Uh-huh. Yeah, I actually, in December, I played there.
Okay.
They had an event. Armando actually was there, too, and Juan, they came out. One of my friends, they did like a pop-up thing in there.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember.
And
yeah.
They hit me up. Like, my friends hit me up. And they were like, yo, can you come play? I'm like, yeah, for sure. So I thought, man, I've always wanted to play Fat Beats. That's like a store I was going to ever since like high school. So like part of my set was like more electronic music and stuff and my beats. And then eventually I snuck in some like Mobb Deep. Stuff, and they were into what I was playing, but once I started playing that Mobb Deep, like, the workers were like, what the fuck? They were tripping out, like, because it's Fat Beats, you know, it's all hip-hop, so
right.
It just, for them, they were loving it.
Is it in the same place, or is it a different location?
They're probably more in they're in downtown LA, but more in like the industrial side. It looks kind of crazy. Like, the store is really nice. It looks all high end on the inside.
Oh, okay.
Very minimal, but the area looks kind of like the Wild West, kind of crazy.
Oh, so it's nothing like what it used to look like with all the posters on the ceiling and all that.
Nah. It's like, yeah, like now they won't even have a poster. They'll probably have like a really, maybe like a high end picture of an artist or something.
Oh, okay. So it's more hipstery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It has that element. Very, very hipsterish, but it's still kind of cool. I'll have to, I'll mail you. I have some Fat Beat stickers.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'll mail you some, because when I was there, they gave me a bunch of stickers, like Fat Beat stickers.
Oh, cool.
Then I was like, oh, dude, thank you. Like, it's official, finally.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of bummed when they closed that one down, dude. Like I said, pretty much every time I went to LA, I made it a point to stop by there.
Mm-hmm. Nah, heck yeah, dude. That was definitely a spot right there.
Yeah.
For Fat Beats. But hey, man, it was a pleasure talking to you, Juan.
Well, man, thank you for having me on and giving us a chance to plug the show.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing the podcast, man. Like I said, it's inspiring a lot of people. I know it kind of inspired myself and my brother to get back on this, especially here in the first episode, we're kind of like, man, that sounds like us when we were little, man. Like,
oh, man.
Right, you're bringing back all the memories, man. So I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in the culture, man. You're really doing a good job.
Oh, man. Thanks, dude. You're welcome. Heck yeah. Well, we'll stay in touch.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
We'll help you promote this event.
Thank you.
Any shout outs?
Shout out to Bancho for the paint job on the 67, the Dead End guys for allowing us to put the show together at their event, yourself, Armando, for being a part of it, and pretty much everybody in the culture, man, all the people, all the model car clubs out there. Keep doing what you guys are doing.
Nice. Heck yeah.
So
thanks, dude.
All right, man.
Well, you have a good night.
You too.
All right, bro. Peace.
Right. Later.